Saturday. V-minus 81. Denver International Airport, Denver, Colorado. Having kept his thoughts on the so-called Zanzibar Triangle to himself overnight, aware of his close observation, as he was, Dan was overwhelmingly glad when word came in on Saturday morning that Birchwood was open for business once more. A small exclusion zone was still in place around the drive-in, given the reasonable expectation that news of another supposedly alien discovery would bring crowds once more, but residents, like Dan and Emma, would be allowed to go in and out of town as they pleased. Right now, the only way Dan wanted to think about going was in, and Emma shared the sentiment. Their pre-honeymoon had been cut short by a development neither had seen coming, but now that it was over, they wanted to get home as quickly as possible. An airport was no place to spend any night, let alone one as politically turbulent as the last, and their small room's TV set had proven too tempting to resist. Because of this, they were actually aware of the growing diplomatic tensions over the discovery in Tanzania, an ELF member state, with talk of an emergency GCC summit having leaked out of Buenos Aires. Nothing regarding the content of the meeting had leaked out, and although Emma was naturally curious, she knew this was for the best. Things were shaky enough as they were without any off-the-cuff and potentially regrettable reactions making their way into the public sphere. As soon as the road in and out of Birchwood reopened, Clark McCarthy set off on the drive to Denver. He insisted this was no trouble, and Dan was glad of it, understandably more reluctant than ever to get into a vehicle that wasn't driven by someone he trusted completely. Dan even asked Clark to make sure he drove his own car, which was older than Dan's and lacked some of the smart features which Dan's paranoid mind now worried could be used to remotely immobilize the engine or even take control of the steering mechanism and eliminate him once and for all. Dan didn't know who exactly might have a sufficiently strong interest in trying to get rid of him for this to be something worth worrying about, but such small details didn't stop his mind from wandering. When Clark called again to say he was outside, one of the airport's regular security staff asked Dan for an autograph before he left. Dan obliged, happily enough. The man sounded local, couldn't have been any older than 25, and had been friendly and helpful overnight whenever they'd needed anything. A supervisor stepped in when the man asked for a photograph, however, and Dan could only apologize, having initially agreed. 8 security staff flanked the couple as they walked to the airport's exit, which from their current position involved passing through a busy area. The option of waiting 15 minutes while this area was cleared was offered to Dan and Emma, but neither were willing to entertain the idea of putting so many people through such an inconvenience. The airport really was no place to spend any more time than necessary, as they had both been reminded overnight, and they had no problem with traversing a crowd of people who would be delighted to see them. For most of the past year, Dan had avoided public areas as much as possible, simply to keep himself out of the media, in the hope of hastening a return to something approaching a normal life. After what had happened in Italy and Tanzania, however, he knew the days of hoping for such a thing truly were gone. He put on a brave face as one of the security officers opened the door which led them into the large arrivals area. It took mere seconds for the news of his presence to ripple through the crowd. The effect was visible. Along the lines of a Mexican wave, as first every head turned and then every pair of feet approached. 4 of the security officers surrounded the couple more tightly now, with the others using firm words and raised tasers to enforce a buffer of several meters in each direction. Dan didn't hear any particularly audible comments from the crowd and didn't get the impression that many of them were asking questions about the Zanzibar Triangle or anything else. Most were simply smiling and waving, some taking photos and some raising their thumbs in support. "It's been a while, huh?" Emma whispered, smiling along with their supportive public and momentarily forgetting the storm clouds that were gathering. "Have you missed it?" Dan chortled. "I wouldn't go that far." A line of stores filled the wall to their left, positioned to separate recent arrivals from some of their money, and evidently aimed more at the tourist market than the business travelers, who still accounted for a narrow majority of the airport's traffic, despite a huge rise in visits to Colorado following contact day and everything that had preceded it. Dan momentarily wondered if a similar influx would soon hit Zanzibar and wherever else further triangles might turn up, but his attention then fell on one particular store. It was busy, or at least had been until its customers began flooding towards him, and the italicized, terrace-style signage made him smile even wider. The huge pictures in each window were eye-catching shots of Tara Ford herself. One showcased a simple yellow party dress and was set against the backdrop of a long exposure shot of streetlights in a city that looked like New York. The other, a black-and-white close-up of her face, to Dan's mind evoked thoughts of catwalks and perfume commercials where no one was allowed to smile. He knew that Terra Style, always fully capitalized, was the name of a series of stores aimed at a young, price-conscious crowd. Its upmarket and hair-raisingly expensive counterpart, Terra Couture, did have a presence in Colorado, but lay to the south in Colorado Springs, with other locations in more traditional fashion capitals, such as Paris and London. Given Terra's level of fame and the depth of her recent association with Colorado, it made sense for there to be a Terra-style outlet within the building where Colorado met the world, in the same way it made sense for a Scottish airport to contain stores selling expensive tweed and whiskey, or for a Cuban one to contain stores full of rum and cigars. The same logic held for the alien-themed gift shop that was also rapidly emptying before Dan's eyes. Its window displayed all kinds of memorabilia and trinkets, from posters of the drive-in to full-size replicas of the Welcome to Birchwood, proud home of Dan McCarthy sign that would greet any tourists who made their way towards the small and once unknown town whenever it wasn't closed off to incoming traffic. The walk passed without incident, and Dan was sitting in Clark's car within a few minutes. Dan and Emma, quickly settling in the back seat, stuck to their plan of not telling Clark anything until they got home. This was less about keeping his mind focused on the road than it was about Dan's desire to tell Henry and Tara at the same time. After almost 2 years of secrets and lies, all he wanted was for his close friends and family, his trusted circle, his team, to be on the same page whenever possible. "How are you guys doing?" Clark asked, deliberately low-key in his greeting.
"Glad to be home," Emma replied. "Where's Tara? I thought she might have fancied coming along for the ride to get her out of the house."
Clark turned the ignition to start the engine. "She's still sleeping off last night," he said, not laughing.
"Last night? I thought everything was closed and you were both staying in."
"Yeah, that doesn't exactly stop her from going to town these days," Clark shrugged. "It was the same at the grill the other night. She's in that kind of drinking to feel better zone right now, you know? Not drinking to have more fun. I've been staying at your place for the last few nights because she didn't want to be alone, and she usually lives alone, so it's not like she's not used to it. You know her better than me, but I don't know. This seems like it's maybe more than just feeling down about a guy." Emma sighed, almost sorry she'd asked, but naturally concerned.
"They did just break up 2 weeks ago," she said, "and she did find out he was cheating when Blitz News ran the story, but she seemed to be getting over it before we left. She forced us not to cancel our trip and said she'd be fine staying in Birchwood as long as you'd be around, and it sounds like you have been."
"I have," Clark nodded, "and I don't want you to think it's worse than it is or anything. I mean, she's okay, but I'm glad you guys are home earlier than planned. You know, ignoring everything else that's happening right now and why you're home early, I think she needs you." Emma lifted her phone from her pocket.
"I'll tell her we're on the way home," she said, getting right to the texting.
Dan, silent in the seat behind Clark, looked out of the window and saw a huge Terra Couture billboard featuring Hollywood A-lister Caitlin Judd in a subtly pinstriped power suit. Tara was certainly doing okay, but Dan knew that didn't mean anything if she wasn't feeling okay. Clark seemed to respect Dan's tired silence for the rest of the drive, which passed fairly quickly thanks to Sunday's typical lack of late morning traffic. After lounging in thought most of the way, Dan sat up straight when there were only a few minutes to go. He looked out with a head full of competing memories as he saw the barely visible turn towards Richard Walker's old place at Stevenson Farm. The site of so many incredible extraterrestrial moments that it would have been a tourist destination rivaling the drive-in if anyone other than the three people in the car and Tara knew about them.
Phil Norris now owned the place, having bought it at auction after Walker's death, and they still saw no reason to complicate Phil's life and ruin his love affair with Stevenson Farm by telling him which political titan used to live in the cottage or which interplanetary travelers had made more than a single landing in its adjacent cornfield. Next came the road sign, which was always when the real feeling of being home kicked in. A heavy police presence surrounded the drive-in, and a manned roadblock remained in place on the way to the McCarthy's residential area of town. The attending officers saw Clark's car approaching and raised the barrier in good time, with no need for him to draw to a full stop. He raised a hand in appreciation and continued on. A minute or so later, the car did draw to a stop as he pulled into the driveway. The door's not opening, Dan said in surprise as he tried to get out. He glanced forward to Clark and saw his expression and body language turn in a decidedly negative direction. So, Clark said, huffing out the word, were you ever planning to tell me about this goddamn message you got on Friday night, or are we back to keeping secrets? When the hell did I ever keep a secret from you? Dan snapped, the words pouring out of his mouth at twice the normal rate. And what are you even talking about? The Closter letter way back at the start? Okay, one thing for a few days when you were on another continent and I didn't want to mention it over the phone. That's your beef? I need to know these things, Dan, Clark said, his tone one of concern rather than anger. Open the door right now or I'm smashing my way out, Dan threatened, emptily and emotionally, from a position of frustration and exhaustion. Clark pressed the button to unlock the passenger doors and folded his arms in annoyance as Dan wasted no time in getting out. How do you know? Emma asked, perfectly calm despite the heated exchange and the surprising question that kicked it off. I mean, obviously we were going to tell you as soon as we got inside, but how the hell do you already know? Clark opened his own door, answering as he stepped out. Godfrey told everyone at the GCC, which meant Timo's three delegates heard. Alessandro called him as soon as he could, and he called me. Simple as that. Dan, having lifted out his suitcase, noticed Clark getting out of the car, but hurried into the house without a backwards glance. You need to tell me these things, Clark yelled, striding forward in pursuit. Emma intercepted him at the door and stood directly in front of him. Clark, give him a break. She hissed under her breath, surprising him with the insistence of her tone. You don't have a clue where we've been or the weight that's on his shoulders. There are no more secrets, okay? But the last person we need any more bullshit from is you. Let him breathe. If something happens, I need to know, Clark reiterated. He's my brother. And he needs you? Of course he does. But right now... Well, right now, I need you to bring Mr. Bird across the street and see if you can get hold of Phil while you're at it. Dan wants to tell everyone at once. Tara and my dad already know too, Clark said. Emma shook her head. None of you know everything.